Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, we talk college football. We do a year-round, half for a decade. Nine states and 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing. Thank y'all so much. Talking earlier in the program, there's a media newsletter that goes around, and one of the stories in today's edition, I mean, it had big picture Eli Gold right there and said, broadcast industry tough for legends, and teams don't want substandard broadcasts. Like, that was the headline, and then the subheadline, and then picture Eli. And so getting work's at the level that Eli had been used to getting work, like he was the voice of NASCAR and Bama football. It's tougher. So he is doing some Arena League work. He's doing some Jack State work. The idea, I think, is to include football down the line. But right now, that's what he is. And so he's picking up jobs and continuing to work. And that's not everybody at his age. Some people just put their palms up and go, it's into the rainbow time, man. I'm going to retire. Eli wants to work. It's just, it's a really tough environment out there for the man right now. We're going to talk positives as well. Want to bring on right now from AL.com. He's the Bama reporter. It's Matt Stahl. Matt, how's your Thursday?
Going great, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Quick comment on Eli. He's hustling and putting together the resume and staying busy, and he wants to keep working, and good for him. Just give me your the feedback you got from either your readers or the folks you interact with there, because, I mean, that's never an easy thing for any place, especially Alabama, where you had so much success for decades.
No, it's such a shame it ended that way. Like, you know, if anybody earned the right to go out sort of on their terms, it was Eli Gold. You know, just absolute, just legend of the game, one of the great just radio broadcasters of all time, clearly loves what he does. But, I mean, on the other hand, I think it's a little easier for some of these Bama fans just because, I mean, Chris Stewart, who's also great, wonderful person, yep, has just been doing a great job calling Alabama basketball since, like, 98. So I think that softens the blow a little bit. But, you know, I think by and large fans really wish Eli sort of could have gone out on his own terms.
All right, this is kind of groovy because I had been to practice before in Tuscaloosa, but I have to say, no, I had been in Tuscaloosa while practice was going on. Kalen DeBoer is opening parts of practice for media, fans, whoever. Is that right?
For just for media, no fans there this time. But yeah, there's going to be three open practice periods, I think, is what's scheduled right now for spring practice under Kalen DeBoer. That's something that Nick Saban had completely nuked in 2021. Most of it came back like very briefly after COVID, yep, but was very shortly thereafter kind of scuttled again. And yeah, you know, it's not, I think I stand a little bit differently than a lot of beat writers do on the topic of open practice, in that, like, you know, how much am I really going to get as a reporter out of watching players stretch? But yesterday it wasn't a whole, like, we weren't watching stretches. We weren't watching a bunch of like 11-on-11 football. We didn't see any of that. But, you know, we got to see some drills. You know, you get to, Nick Saban used to complain about reporters taking role. We have to take a little bit of role. I think it's a good move for Kalen DeBoer. You know, some of the things that Nick Saban could do because he was Nick Saban, I think Kalen DeBoer has realized he's not going to try to do. I think he's trying to be on a little better terms with the local media, which, you know, I appreciate.
Well, win six natties and maybe he can change. Ty Simpson, what's going on between his ears? What do you think his idea is? Because you're playing quarterback and you're not likely to start or play much. You've got to have an idea, though. You've got to have a plan. What is it?
I think the thing about Ty Simpson is his dad is a college football coach, right? His dad is Jason Simpson, who's the head coach over at Tennessee Martin. And I think Ty Simpson is smart enough to know that, like, he doesn't necessarily have to be, like, very top of the depth chart. Like, he played – of the quarterbacks who got in besides Jalen Milroe last season, like, he was the one playing the best. And I think he's smart enough to realize that he's, like, he's one injury away from being starting quarterback, at least in some capacity at Alabama. And get it, the thing about right now is, like, he's got tape, a little bit of tape against USF, where nobody looked good on the Alabama side. He's got some tape against UT Chattanooga, and that's pretty much it. I think he played a few snaps against Kentucky. But he's smart enough to realize that, like, there's a good chance he gets on the field, at least in some capacity this season. And I think, he's good enough to play well. Clearly, he likes the Kalen DeBoer offense well enough to stick around. But I think he'll be maybe in a little better place to make a decision whether he sticks around, because I think Jalen Milroe sees this as his final season at Alabama. He'll have another year of eligibility. He's called it his senior year. I think Ty will either be able to stick around and really compete for the starting job next season, have a year, year older, year more physically developed, or he can go somewhere else and maybe would have seen the field a little bit more, have some tape at Alabama.
Couple more questions. Matt Stahl, AL.com is where you're going to find him, dealing it out every day, talking about Alabama. All right, I'm going to tell you, here's what I've heard from Dylan Lonergan, is he's also a baseball stud, and then last year Saban true loved him and convinced him to come in early, and everybody in there really was impressed with the kid. He's even further down the depth chart. Is everybody still high about Dylan Lonergan? And what's baseball on his profile right now?
We've not heard from him since before the Rose Bowl, and Kalen DeBoer just hasn't been asked about him yet. He's stuck around, so clearly there's something here he likes. We have asked the baseball coach about him several times, and the word on that is sort of wait and see on whether he's going to keep playing baseball. Clearly he enjoys playing baseball but sees himself more as a football player. I think Rob Vaughn, the baseball coach, said something along the lines of, well, there's a lot of change, across the parking lot, because Malmore, the football facility, is right across the street from the baseball park. He's like, there's a lot of change over there. He's going to sit over there, wait till things settle down, see if he can get settled in here. Then maybe we'll talk about him playing baseball. But, if I had to put money on it, he probably won't play baseball this season.
All right, I'm just going to give him an observation, because it's just the backdrop of, Chuck, they started Jalen and Tua and Bryce. So you do what you do when you got studs at quarterback. Alabama has an average 200 yards rushing a game since 2017. Part of that is because they haven't been as big and burly and dominating tackle to tackle. How's that offensive line going to look this year, and how's the running game going to look this year? Because it just hadn't been the same in several seasons.
It's interesting. The offensive line last season, just clearly had so many issues, from not being able to get the ball snapped properly to, it was like some of your stud guys getting blown off the line in the Rose Bowl last season. It's wait and see, I think, is my stance on it this year. I think they brought in a few transfers from Washington. Certainly going to be a new face at center. Whether it's, James Brockermeyer coming back or Parker Brailsford, who came in from Washington, if I had to bet on it, I'd probably pencil him in as the starter, but it's March, so we'll see.
All right, same thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's just one of those things. Like, it has to be better for Kalen DeBoer to work. I think it will be better, in part just because, you know, some folks are, like, Elijah Pritchett of the world are a year older. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was mentioning the same thing. J.C. Latham, media, everybody was going around media days last year swearing, no, we're back. We're going to be that Bama offensive line, and it just never happened. Flip it around, same sort of thing. We're still 5 months from a game, but Christian Robinson, new D.C., Kane Womack. Talk about the pass rush they're going to gin up. Give me the top two or three, like, sack artists on this coming year's team. See the future 5 months from now.
Yeah, that can be a tricky one because – I mean, that's where they took some losses during this offseason. I mean, you know, they survived the Will Anderson loss just because, Chris Braswell was so ready to step up and had clearly been ready to step up for at least a year there. He's gone now. Dallas Turner's gone. I like LT Overton. Came in from Texas A&M. Yep. Deontay Lawson, still there at linebacker. I think he's going to play a big role in this. I mean, there's so many young guys on the team. You know, Keanu Coates there, Quay Rousseau, he could be one. The one I would have told you a few days ago, they brought, you know, five-star when he came in, redshirt freshman Keon Keeley, who didn't see the field last season. But word is they're moving him to more – you know, every coach loves to call positions things, like, different things now. They're moving him to more of the bandit role, which is more of a heavy defensive end than it is the sort of edge rusher thing that they've been doing. It's a little change under Kane Womack here. But you could see him contribute in the pass rush as well.
Yeah, Deontay Lawson's a good name. With him, he's healthy. He's going to be flying around making plays, no doubt. Brother, I appreciate the input. It's always good stuff. Thank you, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Matt Stahl, AL.com. Deontay is still there. And, it's a guy that the talent is no issue. Good for him trying to figure out, what if I'm an older man running around on the college field? What would that be like? And so he's there. Now, there's also, like he said, Keon Keeley, who is now – he worked with a defensive lineman in the first practice, at least during the periods where the media was able to view. And he mentioned Keanu Coate. Just a lot of really good, young, athletic, potential edges there. Give me the old man. I don't know, a 22-year-old's going to have that old man strength versus whatever athletic, fastest, you know, freshman or redshirt – like Keeley, whatever he's going to have, it's going to be different. I've been in here working out for 4 years, man. I won a national championship. I was here for that. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. Let's come back and continue hour two next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
We continue on this Thursday. We're talking college football. It is March. Combine is complete. The NFL has succeeded in being a every month of the year. Now, in the season, the games take care of everything. And then the Super Bowl dominates when 9/11 actually is what forced the calendar. When 9/11 pushed, because you can't just cancel the week of games, you got to push them back. Pushed the Super Bowl into February, I was like, oh, I know where this is going. Back then, February sweeps was actually a thing. But when it became year-round that the NFL had something in every month, it was a great thing because February, that was first the Super Bowl, then it was the Combine. And then March, you had free agency. And then April, you had the draft. And then you had all of this stuff just laid out. You had June 1st cuts. July, well, that was camp opening, and then August, well, gosh, it's We're in Canton. It hasn't been as, I'll say, seamless or positive for college football. Like the transfer portal in May, that hasn't been quite as tasty as the NFL draft for the league. Now it's been great for, I guess, interest and whatever else. It hasn't been great for the sport. The reason for the attention for college football in May, the reason for college football attention in February used to be great. In the NFL, it's the Super Bowl. You know what it used to be in college football was signing day. Do you know what it is now? The coaching carousel. Like, all of us paying attention to Georgia State football really was... Can you imagine the college football world saying a national debate show, like, I looked up and on the side where they list all the stuff they're about to talk about, GSU coach. And it was, you know, where they put the hashtag and the exclamation point, the question mark, like it's our way of swearing. It's not been good for college football to be in the news. And one of those transfers, Riley Leonard, I blindsided Heath a couple of weeks back. I was like, you know how many touchdown passes Riley Leonard had last year? And he said, oh, I don't know, 16. I said 3. He was like, oh. And he thought, oh, yeah, wait a minute, I shouldn't. I only asked him that because about, I don't know, earlier that day or that earlier, you know, the night, previous night, I had looked at it and said, no, that can't be right. And I saw it. Then I looked at the game log, and then I went back and looked at each individual game, and then I went from ESPN.com to the Duke website to this secret website where if you're in the media, you get everything. And I was like, no, he threw 3 touchdown passes last year. My question, now here's what happened. Here was our perspective. What happened was we all watched the Clemson game, and we were so excited that cheerleader Dabo, who we like to point at and mock, you and your big hire and no transfers, and you're so at it, and you got beat by Mike Elko and Duke, and you got hammered, and you look bad. Boy, look at that Riley Leonard guy. Riley Leonard threw for 175 yards and no touchdowns that night. He completed 17 to 33 passes for 175 yards and no touchdowns. He ran for 98 yards and a score. And so that's all well and good. Riley Leonard became the new Sam Hartman. He got a big-time deal to go transfer to Notre Dame and work for Sam Hartman money-wise. I'm just going to work for Riley Leonard. Good for him. He earned it. It's a good-looking young kid, and he's a talented, thick, kind of rough-and-tumble quarterback. And I have said the ultimate asterisk here. Numbers for a quarterback are only an indication. All right, how did you get the numbers? That's what really matters. And so there's always layers to the onion here. Riley Leonard was hurt for part of last year. He still played a majority of the season. He had 3 touchdown passes. And he only ran for 4 scores. He was hurt. It was a pretty bad injury. And he played through it. As far as raw production, it was not there. The number that I saw talking about just breaking down his schedule, because I brought up Riley Leonard just a couple of weeks ago, and I sprung and I was like, hey, Heath, ambush. And he's like, oh, really, 3? He had 4 games against teams that finished in the top 25. He threw 1 touchdown in those 4 games and completed less than 50% of his passes. That's not necessarily the best commentary on what's about to happen. Now, again, it was not the season he wanted. And based on how it started when he was, I guess, healthy for the opener, it could have been a lot better statistically. For Duke, remember how hot, just house of fire, and then a close loss, and then just a bunch of losses. But like 12 of 27 in the close loss at home to Notre Dame, 12 of 27 for 134 yards for a touchdown and a pick. That's just the guy having a game. That's all. That's just a guy. So I'm just looking at raw bottom line production, and then also do have some of the context. I'm wondering, what is he going to be really? Because if you think this is going to be Sam Hartman, I just flung 110 touchdown passes at Wake. It's not exactly that. Heath, how's a Thursday?
Okay, so Chuck, you every day here on this show for 2 hours dish out opinions, and then for four more hours on 680 The Fan in Atlanta and Afternoon Drive, you also dish out opinions. So that is one quarter of your day spent giving opinions on sports. How often do you wake up and say, I need a spicy opinion? I gotta build the Oliver Brand with a hot take today. I got a spicy opinion.
Cannon shot.
Because apparently Chris Sims just, for NBC, just sits around and says every day, hey, more jalapenos for me, baby.
Pots and pans.
This Chris Sims has come out with his top six NFL quarterback prospects. Don't know if you've seen him or not, but you can always count on Chris every single time for at least one. Whoa, look at that. That's a hot take. Oh, boy. Here's your top six prospects. See, even he's not willing to take the shot of, no, it's not Caleb Williams, number one. Williams, number one. Jaden Daniels is number two. Number three is Bo Nix. Not appearing in your picture so far, Drake May. Number four, Michael Penix. Number five, J.J. McCarthy. And down there at number six is finally where, in tier four, according to Chris Sims, is where Drake May shows up. I'm sorry. Drake May's a good player. I understand that North Carolina, if all you do is go by how their offense looked last year and some of the desperation throws he had to make and the lack of offensive line support he had, if you want to act like that's a fair reflection of everything he's done, okay, go for it. That dude can play, Chuck, and I'm sorry. If you take Bo Nix ahead of Drake May, you're an idiot.
Drake May or Jaden, to me, is eye of the beholder or OC's play sheet. Like, what is it we're trying to do? Maybe there's some differences. I think Drake May and even Caleb, there's some of that, but Caleb's just a better prospect. But Drake May would even be sort of eye of the beholder, like a 30-70, 20-80 pick versus Caleb Williams. But you go with Caleb. That's where it ends to me. I mean, it looks like you put in an order for Dr. Frankenstein, and he came back and said, here's your quarterback. It's what you want, and the next level knowledge, and what is imperfect, by the way, and they had to tell him, stop running so much. You got too much at risk. Stop running. He can do that. Big, thick, physical, the strong arm, all of this stuff I always talk about. When you're that tall and the broad-shouldered and you understand at that advanced level, it's hard to find a lot wrong with him as a prospect. And some of those other guys, I mean, whether it's the knees or the – that's a weird list.
It's a very weird list. But this is also the guy who gave you Matt Corral as the number one overall quarterback prospect 2 years ago. So, I again, Chris's brand is what it is for a reason.
Well, that is where we are now that the Combine is done and we are putting together our revised hot take list.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
College football conversation continues on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states and 60 sticks. Louisiana all the way down to Florida, up the Atlantic coast, all around Giant Circle, talking college football, doing it across the entire network every day on the Dunkin' Newsmaker line. Toasted coconut be my recommendation if you're heading to Dunkin'. Want to welcome on right now, talking a little LSU from 247. It is Sonny Ship. Sonny, how you doing?
Good, Chuck. What's going on, my man?
Let's talk everything going on in Baton Rouge. You got the beginning of spring practice. You have juniors coming on campus for recruiting. Let's start with the football. Anything they had to practice earlier today? Just any general impressions? If you want to start with Nussmeier, start with Nussmeier.
I think LSU fans are gonna be excited and pleased with what they see from the offense. You know, obviously it'll look a lot different with Nussmeier back there because he's going to be throwing a lot more, and you're not gonna have that dynamic running ability that Jaden Daniels added to the field, obviously, but. He's going to put up good numbers. The key on how good of the numbers he puts up is who's going to step up at wide receiver, because, you know, you look out there and you see guys like Kyron Lacy, Aaron Anderson, Chris Hilton, and you say, okay, they can be good, but, you know, will they be good? You got a bunch of unproven guys, I think. Kyron Lacy caught a lot of balls last year and stuff, but he also dropped more than a few. And so can he become more consistent? Can Aaron Anderson be that threat that you hoped he would be coming over from Alabama? And can Chris Hilton stay healthy? If he stays healthy, I think he could be on that level of a Brian Thomas Jr., a guy who really ascends after he blows up the combine. But, those are kind of some early thoughts. Offensive line's going to be really, really stacked. And then, you know, you look on the defensive side of the ball and you just hope it looks nothing like it did last year.
Yeah, I want to ask you about one of their receivers, Xavien Thomas. They have brought in some talented, and I'll say proven talent. I mean, it works both ways. Logan Diggs went the other way, but Xavien Thomas comes in. What do you think is like a goal for Garrett Nussmeier from the coach's standpoint? What is their goal, you think, maybe for Garrett Nussmeier and maybe a receiver or two during spring?
Well, Xavien Thomas and C.J. Daniels, the transfer from Liberty, those are two guys who, they're obviously a little bit behind the others because the other ones are quote-unquote veterans, even though they haven't been there a whole long period of time. But I think when you look at, you know, if you go back and if you look at production, you know, at the college level, C.J. Daniels and Xavien Thomas have more than anybody else on LSU's roster. And, so I don't think there's any question that they're going to be, you know, that they're going to be in the mix and they're going to be in the picture. I think it's just going to take a little time for them to kind of get used to the nuances and everything that goes on with the offense and stuff. But from a production standpoint, those guys have it. And Xavien Thomas has enough speed. I think one of the questions with C.J. Daniels is how does he adjust to the SEC defensive backs that he's going to be going up against from a speed and from a separation standpoint? Because, you know, it's a lot getting in and out of those routes and stuff. You got to be physical. And, I think that's an area of his game that you want to see him kind of prove it at.
All right, you're not a legal reporter, but we got to hit the crime blotter a little bit. Do you have any sort of update or indication? Has there been any announcement about redshirt freshman running back Trey Holly? He got suspended about a month ago. Is there any development? He's like, I'm going to tweet my way right through this. I am innocent, and we'll all find that out. Have you had any update or indications?
But Chuck, for the record, you know, I did go to college for 7 years, so I could be an attorney, but, you know, it's hard to get in law school with a degree in general studies. It took 7 years, right?
And then pass the bar even, so.
Oh, that's not even in the consideration. I'd have to cheat my way through that. But Trey Holly, you know, he has. On Twitter, he has been adamant about that he is not guilty of this, that he has been mis-ID'd, that he is, that he will be exonerated. But I think you have to put a big TBD by that. And because as confident as he seems, you know, when you have a bond set at $500,000 for the charges that he's been faced with, that kind of makes you believe that the people bringing those charges forward, that they feel pretty good about the situation they're in, too. So it's really an odd situation, you know, when you have both sides who seem like they know what's going on or what happened, I guess I should say. So I'll be surprised. I'll be really surprised if we see him in 2024, just because the legal process usually doesn't operate that quickly. Unless something changes, it doesn't seem like that, you know, there is no talk, there's no chatter or anything about, hey, you know, maybe they're going to lessen the charges or maybe that they're going to drop them completely. I haven't heard any kind of chatter like that.
There were moments last year where, despite all the names on the depth chart for LSU at running back, and they're good ones. I mean, Jaden Daniels, I mean, he went for 1,000 yards just himself, but then all the running backs, there's a freshman, Caleb Jackson, and I was like, he's only on the field for a minute. It was only a couple of carries. He looks like he's got something. Is he the only running back right now for spring?
No, you got Josh. Well, Josh Williams is also on the roster, obviously the graduate transfer, you know. Talking him into coming back was huge, especially when you
But is he available? Like he's, I'm talking about available. Didn't Josh Williams? He's come back from a knee injury, though, isn't he?
He's coming back from a he got dinged up and stuff. He right now, Caleb Jackson is your horse back there, and you know you don't have a you don't have much depth after him. You're waiting on Caden Durham. He gets to campus in June, but you can't go into a season with just those three guys. Yeah. You know, I mean LSU's going to have to get some assurance out of the transfer portal in this second window that's going to open in about a month.
Yeah, that's one of those things, because I'm trying to remember, was it Trey Holly just in the spring game he was the only running back, or there was some time in spring where they were like, yeah, Trey Holly's the only thing we got. And now you get that in spring sometime with running backs, and it looks like Caleb Jackson may have that. Yeah. All right, flip it around to defense, and you had referenced this, the defensive tackles. They got two coming back, Lee and Guillory. Talk about either the five-star who will be here, I guess, later. Talk about the JUCO. I mean, you can't even go into – not even if they're two studs, you can't go in with two defensive tackles. What's LSU going to do in the middle of the defense and then work out?
Well, you hope Sean Washington, you know, he's coming in 2 years – 2 years removed from high school, so you hope that he's a little more physically ready than he would be as an 18-year-old true freshman. And yeah, you get Dominic McKinley this summer, but there's no question that when you look at needs coming out of this spring, LSU's got to get a big man out of the transfer portal. They've got to get at least one. They could even use two defensive tackles. The issue right now is that they're still over the 85-man limit, so they still have some attrition that they've got to get to before they can even dip their toes back into the portal. But there's no question, defensive tackle, huge, huge need. There, you know, Jacobian Guillory has been a career reserve, and while he's been a solid reserve, you can't enter a season like this and say, okay, now we can double your workload from 30 to 35 snaps a game to 60 to 65 snaps a game. And Jalen Lee is another guy who, you know, he can give you some snaps, but there's no way he could, you know, that he can give you what you need as from an SEC starting defensive tackle. One of the bigger surprises so far during the spring is that Savion Jones is still working at defensive end. When you looked at LSU's roster and you said, okay, who's a guy who could potentially move inside to be defensive tackle, I think you look at number 35 and you say, okay, he looked like a defensive tackle playing defensive end last year just because of all the weight that he gained. You know, he's still listed at 280 pounds, which is what they had him at last year. And, I would think that that's one of the easier moves that you can make to try to shore up the inside. But and maybe they will still make that move. You know, sometimes guys are a little resistant as far as where they think their, you know, their best position is for the NFL, especially when you're talking about a guy who's who's in his fourth year with the program. But that's one of the I think that's one of the more interesting moves that we haven't seen so far.
Wrapping up, Sonny Ship, go 247. I spell it like a Cajun. All right, a few drafts back, it was kind of in fashion for people, I guess, a little further removed from Baton Rouge. Hey, what's the chance that Terrace Marshall is the better receiver than Ja'Marr Chase? And the answer was none. What's the chance Brian Thomas turns into as good a receiver in the league as Malik Nabers?
Oh, well, there's no question, you know, I don't think anyone who watched him play last year when he just got touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, I don't think anyone questioned whether or not, the skill level was there. But then when he went to the combine and he just absolutely crushed it and showed that, you know, not only is the skill level there, the athletic testing numbers are too. I think that there's a very good chance that he could end up being the steal of this draft. Malik Nabers just has so much dog in him to where, man, it's hard to not see that kid just being uber successful at the NFL. So those two are definitely going to be fun to watch, but, you know, you just got to – I think if you're an LSU fan, you just look and you say, man, why couldn't BTJ had come back for a senior year?
Yeah, that phrase, you that dog, everybody knows that's a receiver who goes gets it. Like, that's my football. I'm going to go get it. I appreciate it, Sonny.
You're not getting this.
Good stuff, man. Thank you.
Absolutely, Chuck. Absolutely, man. You have a great day, buddy.
From 247 Sonny Ship, that's what we were talking about with Juwan Jennings, who was a quarterback. And I told the story. The guy in Knoxville was like, yeah, he's not a quarterback anymore because we already have a quarterback. And it is not about Juwan to stand on the sidelines, watch somebody else play. It's like Juwan needs to be on the field. So we got to find something, safety, wide receiver, something, turn into a wide receiver. That dog, if you say that about a wide receiver, he's got that dog in him. That's maybe one of the best for any position in football. That's maybe one of the best non-number, non-specific, concrete, tangible attributes you can say specifically about a receiver and that. I'm going to tell you what else. A defensive end, an edge guy that is that same way. Particularly more of a lineman because you're thinking more of a bigger guy there, and you really want that. Got 275-pound guy, got that dog in him, just gets a shiver when he lights up a quarterback. That's what you want. Vontaze Burfict had it. He just had too much of it. So, yeah, a wide receiver isn't likely to get, you know, late hit penalties on consecutive plays and get ejected from a playoff game. So you love having the dog in that wide receiver. It means he goes and gets the football. It's his. Takes it personally. And so that can be the separator. But Ryan Thomas is tall guy that a scathing molten lava 40 up in Indianapolis, and kid's going to get paid. And some NFL team's going to have to spend a little bit more draft currency on him than maybe they were thinking, but again, Brian Thomas, I think he earned it. So we're going to take a break, and goodness, look at the clock. We've got to wrap up on this Thursday.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I have some transfers at defensive end and defensive tackle, getting those guys up to speed, rotating a lot of guys in there. Well, we have we were very thin at defensive tackle last year. Our rotation was really just about three, four guys total, and we need to develop more depth at the defensive line position. So that'll be a point of emphasis in spring practice.
Chuck Oliver Show, wrapping up on a Thursday. My favorite guys to be around. He's very, I believe, hands on hips, and he's like, here I am, this is the truth. He was talking about being on the Shane Beamer, South Carolina head coach. There, he's mentioning one of the priorities and how the approach will be on defense. We're going to run a bunch of people over there and see what we got. See who can stand out. Everybody's going to have a chance. They just don't have enough. And he said last year we had three guys. Now, one of them was awesome, but there were three guys, and it doesn't matter at that point. There are examples where you just have a generational sort of game wrecker at defensive tackle. Okay, that's different. Like, do you remember Ndamukong Suh? Do you remember he went to Nebraska? Do you remember watching him at Nebraska? He almost won the Big 12 Conference Championship game. He's a defensive tackle. That's the, other than like a guard, it's just not supposed to happen. And Ndamukong Suh did that. I've said very transparently, and I think very fairly, in 2010, Auburn did not have a great defense. They didn't have a national championship defense, probably. They had a really good linebacker in particular. They had a couple of guys that fly around, hit you in the secondary and create some turnovers. Was that Tasharvin? They had Nick Fairley, who they would give up like 63 yards on the drive, and then Nick Fairley would do something and Auburn would get the ball back. Now, that's not a really, I don't think, reliable way to approach defense, but that's kind of how it went. All right, well, now they're down on the 12. Hey, Nick, all right, I'll do something. Against Alabama, do you remember what he did? He knocked the ball loose, then ran around everybody and recovered it. So when you have that guy, it's a little different. That wasn't Tonka. And when it's Tonka and like two others, so at least he's in a position to say we have defensive linemen to try. there are other places. We're talking about LSU. Brian Kelly's like, yeah, we're going to run some offensive linemen over there. Let's see how they let her fly. See if maybe one of the offensive linemen can play some tackle. Just doing what you do. Shane, now for, I guess, two reasons there. Shane ain't got spare offensive linemen to throw over to defense, and he's hoping they do actually have somebody emerge by whatever way. What's up, Heath?
But the thing is, there is someone on offense who could help the defense immensely. It's just that he still is insisting on playing wide receiver.
Are you talking about Nick Harbor?
Nick Harbor would have been the number one edge prospect in the country, but Nick Harbor wants to try and run at the Olympics, and so he's wanted to keep himself at a certain size for that. And so that's why he's a wide receiver, not a tight end, because adding the bulk that would necessarily make him a tight end keeps him from being at his best for the sprinting trials for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, but being able to forklift a right tackle takes away from your 100-meter time.
But if it somehow turns out, I have no idea what his chances are for the Olympics or anything else, if somehow he does not make the Olympics when they have the trials, is there a chance that there is someone, perhaps even someone in Nick Harbor's camp, who would say, Nick, as a receiver, you have enormous size and athletic ability. You might turn into a special player. As a defensive end, you might turn into a number one overall draft pick. Maybe you should look at DN. Just saying, it's not worth ruling out.
But for the five-star to get him, if it was part of why they got him and he wanted to be a wide receiver, they were going to let him be a wide receiver. Be honest, if Nick Harbor said, I'll come to South Carolina only if you let me also play tennis.
100%.
I want to be the mascot at the basketball games.
He could have said, I'm a deep snapper. Sure, come to practice, be a deep snapper. No problem. Whatever makes you happy. When you got a talent like that, you do what you need to do. So we know what Nick Saban's future is with regards to at least some of what he's doing on broadcasting. He has already let it be known he's going to be a part of the ESPN Game Day program. So he's going to go out. He's going to go and be amongst the people on Saturdays. There is another thing being discussed, according to Andrew Marchand, who might be the most respected guy out there when it comes to reporting on sports media. Bill Belichick has not landed yet, but one of the prospects that apparently is being talked about is that Peyton Manning's company, which works closely with ESPN,
Omaha,
is trying to find a way to get Bill Belichick to be involved with them. Belichick apparently has told networks he does not want to be a part of one of the Sunday six guys in a room pretending to laugh at each other's jokes pregame shows.
Coach, what do you think about the linebackers?
Yeah, he doesn't want to do that, and it's not believed he wants to do games. He wants to talk about football, but he wants to talk about football basically the Bill Belichick way. Whatever I'm interested in, I'll talk about. If you ever heard a Belichick press conference, if somebody asked him a question about, say, the development of the tight end position, if he's interested in it, he'll give you 10 minutes that's fascinating on it. So at least according to Andrew Marchand, the goal would be if ESPN and Peyton Manning are teaming up and Manning's company can sign Belichick to create a Manning cast involving Belichick and Saban together. Now, I don't know, in that scenario, would you need to have a host with them, or could they literally, the two of them, just do it? That it seems like you would need a facilitator that both guys don't have some even, respect for.
Don't even Peyton and Eli kind of sometimes need somebody to throw it to break?
It would probably help, but those guys have literally been together their whole lives, so they've got the chemistry. I get that Belichick and Saban have worked together. They're friends. There still is probably a need for somebody to be the person who could facilitate a little bit.
I'd watch.
But Chuck, I mean, what I'd be fascinated in is, okay, so if Saban's doing game day, then presumably he's not then flying somewhere and jumping in a room with Belichick on a Saturday night for college games. But let's say we got them on just a couple, like the Monday night game of Labor Day, for example. It's Saban, it's Belichick breaking down what's going on. I mean, that'd be fascinating, right? I mean, like who, if you love football, unless you are obsessed with the teams themselves and you want the Fowler-Herbstreit call a big game, who would not watch that?
You know what you need is Thanksgiving, the third game on Thanksgiving, with, like, do it at one of their houses with the meal being cleaned up in the background, and they go in to watch the football game, and that's where they talk about it. That's their studio. Like, they could pull that off on one Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Belichick has not been involved in college football for decades. He certainly scouted, but the two of them would probably be a better fit for pro, just because it's easier, I think, for Saban to go pro than it is Belichick to go college. But I hope this happens because ESPN, for whatever reason, one of the things that I thought they did the best job of when they started doing all these multicasts was the coaches' film room on the national
Loved
title
it.
Game.
Loved
it was fantastic.
It.
You had four or five coaches. Sometimes they didn't all do the full game. Sometimes, you know, one guy like Dana Holgorsen would come in for just the second quarter or whatever. But them interacting and them noticing something that you or I might not see and talking about it, that was really good stuff.
I remember, was it Matt Millen called the fake punt for Florida State in the game against Auburn? He's like, this would be a great time to do this, maybe whatever, and basically called it. So you're right.
I hope we get something like this. I don't think it'll happen, but I hope something like this eventually comes to fruition because it'd be great.
A similar instance with a coach in the Oklahoma-Georgia game out in the Rose Bowl as well. So I love the coach's version of the live broadcast there. All right, wraps it up on Thursday. David on the ones and twos. He's doing what he do. All of us. We'll be back in 22 hours talking college football right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a Mad Men's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.